All right, we're talking to Bob Klein, who was on the air at WKLO back in the 70s. Bob, when exactly were you at WKLO?
I was there from December 73, and I left in January of 75. I went back in February of 1976, and I was there till August of 1977, the week the king died.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then I went back, actually, to the same company when it was KJ100, but I never uttered one word on KJ100. I went on the AM, which became Country 11. I was there from August of 80 till New Year's Day, 1983.
Now, had you done radio before WKLO?
Oh, yeah. I started actually where Weird Beard did at WPDF, 1550 on your radio dial, the voice of Lincoln Hills in Cardin, Indiana.
All right. You got that voice down.
How could you forget it? Yeah, I was there for a few months and then went on to E-Town, to WQXE, which is still on the air. Went all the way from 3,000 watts in 73 up to, I think they have 25,000 or something now. Chased a girlfriend of mine out to Colorado, came back a month later and was out of work for about a month and went to WKLO.
Now, why did you leave WKLO in 75 and then come back? What happened then?
In 75, I had an offer from a radio station in Paducah, Kentucky, WKYX, and it was at 570 on AM, and you could get it for about 200 miles. And for a town that size, that radio station had a huge audience from Indiana, Illinois, Tennessee, and Kentucky, very well known, and I went down there and lasted a month. I got fired because I didn't sound like Coyote Calhoun.
That's what they thought they were going to hire?
Well, the thing was, this guy liked somebody else that kind of sounded like Coyote, and he said, well, you work in the same market. I know you can do that. And I don't know why he thought I could do that, but I think I told Coyote later. So Coyote owes me like $15,000, and he hadn't paid me yet.
All right, so you grew up in the Louisville area, right?
Yes.
So you probably remember, before you even thought about getting into radio, listening to Top 40 like Wacky and WKLO.
Yes. WKLO went on the air as WKLO in 1959, I believe.
As a full-time Top 40 station, right?
Right. And I wasn't listening to radio actively then, even though I knew about it. A friend of my father's worked at Wacky, and his name was Bud Reeves, and he kept telling my father, don't let him get into radio. I remember he used to come to our house. My dad played cards on Friday night and would have a half a dozen guys over. And Bud Reeves came one night and said, there's another station, WKLO, that's going top 40 in a few days. And they had an advertisement in the paper, or there was an article that somebody wrote from the Courier Journal. I remember that. But my first day of really listening to WKLO, and I remember it like it was 2 weeks ago, was Labor Day 1960. Remember that day, John, you went to the camp and you heard Wacky?
Yes.
And you went, oh, well, that's what happened to me on Labor Day 1960. I can't remember who was on the air. I think Barney Groven was program director back then. I don't know where my family was, but I listened for several hours that day. And every day that I possibly could listen to the radio as much as I could, that's what I did from then on. Still do.
So when did you know that you wanted to be on the radio?
I think it might have been that day or very soon after, because I'm a music lover. I'm a musician. I've played music for many years. I play guitar. I was a vocalist also. I love doing that, but there was something about radio, and there must be a little bit of a jailbird in me, because I like to to sit in a room with all this equipment around me. I mean, I could be in a studio for 6 hours and not even think about going outside.
Wow.
I don't know what happened, but it got me. The radio bug got me. I remember early on, the one I really remembered was Paul Cowley. And as good as Wacky was, there was something about Paul Cowley I just really liked. There was something in his delivery and seemed like a nice guy. WKLO had something called the Tunedex, which was the survey of the top 40 songs, and they're on the website. And sometime around that period, I got a survey. Matter of fact, there's one on the website from October 1st, 1960. I think I had that one. That might have been one of the first ones I ever got. And I just looked at the list of songs, and it was like the 40 commandments. You know, I guess some people get bitten with the call from the Lord, you know, to do the ministry. I think we got called from the radio God in the clouds or something. And even if I didn't like a song, I always wanted to know what it was doing on the charts. Is this an illness, John?
No, it sounds like a lot of fun to me. Other people might think we're crazy, but did you get a chance to go see WKLO in person? See, that's what I got the radio bug. I immediately wanted to go to the radio station and see how it was all done.
Well, now, since I started, the fall of 1960 was very important to me, and I listened, and I, of course, the jocks' pictures were on the tune decks, as they called it. I knew what everybody looked like, but one night, and I think it was in early 61, I went out to Bob Cogglazier's ranch house in St. Matthews, and Paul Kelly, somewhere, you had to go up a stairs, I remember, was sitting up there with an engineer, two or three turntables, and Pete Boyce, by the way, was the engineer, and some friends of my brothers and I went out there, and when it was time for me to walk past the microphone and say my name, I was too scared to do it.
Wow.
I saw Paul Kelly, and it was like seeing, you know, the president or something.
Uh-huh.
And as a matter of fact, the president could have been sitting there, and I would have said, hi, how are you, sir? But I couldn't talk to Paul Kelly. So I blew that. The next summer, Ed Bowman was doing a remote at a place called the Masonic Home, which was just down the road from the ranch house. This was in the summertime. He had a trailer that had, it was all glass in the front, and you could see him on the air, and I just stood there and watched him. It was kind of like if I was standing on the capsule of the Apollo moon mission in 1969. It was that important to me. He came out, talked to us, and a year later, I called him on the phone and asked him if I could come down there. As a matter of fact, here's how it went, John. I said, hi, my name's Bob Klein. I said Bobby Klein. Bobby Klein, you might as well get to know me because I'm just really into this. And he just started laughing and said, okay, Bob. And I know it was the summer of 62. He let me come down there. And, John, I got to cue up Surfing Safari by the Beach Boys.
Wow.
Now, that's kind of like starting the lunar module going down to the moon. That's like Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong saying, hey, Bob, you want to come with us? And I remember they had four turntables. I couldn't tell you what the board looked like, but everything just looked so spectacular to me, and I thought, I'm going to do this someday. By that time, I might have been 13. I turned 13 in the summer of 62, so if it was, yeah, it was summer of 62, I was 13. And Ed was a very congenial guy, and he was very cordial with me, but when he was busy, he'd say, Bob, I'll have to talk to you later. I'm really busy, and I always understood because I knew they had a lot of things to do there. So that was very important.
So it sounds like you were a WKLO fan from the get-go. Did you listen to any other radio stations in Louisville?
Sure, I listened to them all. I listened to Wacky almost as much as KLO, and sometimes it would depend on, well, as the years went by, WKLO and Wacky, you know, they both change from time to time like everything does. But one thing that really disturbed me was when WKLO started using the Sonovox at the end of the songs, and I wanted to kill them because I used to record songs off the radio, and in 61, they were loose. A lot of times, they didn't come on immediately at the end of the song. It would almost fade out, and every time, it would get that on the tape. But I know now, being in radio, being a programmer at one time, that that's very effective. I think back then, probably one of the main jocks was Jerry Baker, who ended up becoming the voice of the Indiana Pacers. And before we did the reunion on the air in 1991, I called him, and he said, I wish I could come down there, but, and he had a prior engagement, like a lot of other people. But I got, you know, I talked to him, and we reminisced, and he really enjoyed working there. I think he was there about a year.
So could you tell much difference between Wacky and WKLO in the early 60s?
Yeah, seemed like Wacky was a little more gimmick-oriented. I remember Jack Sanders, who was the afternoon jock for several years. I couldn't tell you exactly what years. He called himself Jumpin' Jack Sanders. He kind of changed that to El Jumpo. Let's see, I think it was Quick Draw McGraw and Baba Looey, a cartoon characters back then. Quick Draw McGraw did a routine where he was like Zorro, and he had a guitar, and instead of using a sword, he'd hit people on top of the head with a guitar and go, kabong! And Jack Sanders, I think he had a sound effect of a guitar going, kabong! And he called himself El Jumpo. And that guy was so talented. One of the routines he had was he'd say, hey, all you fender benders, bumper jumpers, grill grinders, and radiator rammers rolling down that boulevard of broken taillights on a torrid Tuesday afternoon. It was Manic Monday, Torrid Tuesday, Wicked Wednesday, Thumping Thursday, Frantic Friday. I don't think he had anything for Saturday or Sunday.
It's amazing you can remember that after all these years.
Oh, absolutely. So Wacky, to me, was as important as WKLO. It was just in the early days, I was kind of stuck on WKLO the first two or three years. I really remember the battle between Wacky and WKLO when Bill Crisp left WKLO. He was doing mornings before Bill Bailey, and Bill Bailey came in sometime in the summer of 1965. And at the reunion, I told Bill Crisp this, and he was amazed. He was surprised. When Bill Crisp left WKLO and went to Wacky, I followed him. It was like, who's this Bill Bailey guy? And I listened to Crisp, and of course, Bailey grows on you kind of quick. And I must have caught him saying something one morning, telling one of his stories, and, you know, he's hilarious. But I was kind of torn between, after a while, of who to listen to, either Bailey or Crisp. When Crisp left, what, Mitch Michael came in, Daryl Matheny, to program WKLO. And that's when the sparks flew. That's when they really had a lot of energy going, noticeably for the first time. Anybody that listened to WKLO and Wacky back then, let's say they listened from the early 60s on, remembers how much energy came out. Part of it was because of the Beatles and the British invasion and all that, but also Mitch Michael kind of came in and woke this town up, and Bill Crisp programming. It was different, but it was also good. But as I understand, Mitch kind of cleaned the floor with Wacky at that time. There was just a lot of energy. I didn't know anything about, you know, processing like compression or anything like that back then. I just knew there was a lot of energy. And when Mitch Michael came in, Bill Crisp got better. I noticed his programming also accelerated, and I don't know where the ratings were during that period, but there was a noticeable difference in both radio stations. As good as Mitch Michael, Carl Truman Wigglesworth, and Bill Hennis, and the program directors of WKLO, good as they were, when Johnny Randolph hit town, I think in between Bill Crisp and Johnny Randolph was Bob Todd. I don't remember a whole lot about the Bob Todd era. It would come back if I listened to tapes or something, but when Randolph came, it kind of sounded like the same old Wacky, and then slowly but surely, Johnny Randolph got Louisville by the radio throat and wouldn't let go. And WKLO, you know, was topping the ratings a few times while Randolph was there, but that always made him better. And every time Randolph came off with something good, whoever was at WKLO, it always made them better. And Lee Gray, who was program director from 75 into, I believe, 78 or 9, I worked under him for a year and a half. And we did something one time, and Johnny came back with something else. And I remember Lee laughing and going, that's Randolph for you. Really respected him. So no matter who was at either radio station, they were always great radio stations. Sometimes they were just greater than others. And, you know, there was the boogie era of Bill Hennis and Carl Wigglesworth and his staff. There was a lot of energy there. It just sounded different when Hennis came in.
Oh, yeah.
I always held Wacky in high regard and didn't really get to know anybody at Wacky. I think I had met or been around Johnny Randolph because I played in a few bands here in town. But the first person I really met from Wacky and got to know other than my dad's friend, who really wasn't a jock for very long, he was mostly news, was Weirdbeard. And I met Weirdbeard and was even at Weirdbeard's house in the summer of 1969 and felt like I was sitting there with my brother. We sat up till 8 o'clock in the morning, and this was sometime June, July of 1969. I remember because Wedding Bell Blues was out, and we were talking about the moonshot, and he was a fantastic guy, and he's missed. He's one of those people who developed, he had IDs still at the Corydon, Indiana station where I worked, and it sounded like him, but his voice back then was, "You're listening to WPDF Corydon, Indiana." And that was approximately 8 or 9 years before he was the Weirdbeard on Wacky, and there was a lot of energy. He could be just as mellow as you want to be and laid back. The next thing you know, he's springing into action. He was a very top-notch, versatile announcer, and I think he's one of those guys that could do anything. So a lot of talent went through both those radio stations. Johnny Randolph told me that when he became program director, he always wanted to hire people that were better than him, and I said, well, that must have been a hell of a job. Because you were a very good jock when he was on WKLO particularly. He woke Louisville up, and he was on in the evening. And I wouldn't let him get away with it. He just kind of laughed. And I said, well, you did. You did a very good job on the air, no matter when you were on there. He was very conversational and had the energy, but also had the flow for anybody that, I guess, ever wanted to be in radio that never was. There are certain people that the way they talk, I think, they ought to be in radio. You know, some of them might sound like Orson Welles or Walter Cronkite, but there's some women that sound like Diane Sawyer or Katie Couric.
All right, so you came to WKLO in 1973. Was that your first time trying to get on there?
Yeah. Well, I knew Chuck Jackson, who worked at Wacky from, 73 to 78. Chuck and I used to play in a band called the Tikis. Wasn't a very big band. I mean, it was, we were 14, 15 years old. Chuck's a very good guitar player. And I sang vocals, and Chuck played rhythm guitar. As a matter of fact, back then, Chuck kind of looked like John Lennon a little bit. And if I'd only looked like Paul McCartney. But anyway, Chuck worked at Wacky. And I happened to go down to Wacky with a friend of mine one night. He knew me as Bobby. And I walked in, and he said, "Bobby Glenn!" And, we were talking, and he said, "Call Robin Walker, WKLO."
He was the program director.
He was the program director. I called Robin the next day, and I said, "Are you looking for somebody?" He said, "I'm desperate for a weekend man." And I thought, well, anything's worth getting your foot in the door. I went in. He listened to a tape of me for about 3 minutes and talked to me, and I remember he was talking, and he stopped mid-sentence and goes, "By the way, you're hired." And he started talking again, and I was like, "What? I'm hired?" And immediately I thought, "You don't do it like that. Well, how are you supposed to do it?" "Okay, Bob, and you're hired in 5, 4, 3, So I started soon after the next couple of days. And the guy who trained me that night was the overnight guy who was recently the president of Infinity Radio. And his name is?
Dan Mason.
Absolutely. Dan is a great guy. Dan and I have always been friends. He's a great guy. And I remember he explained everything to me before I went on the air. And the first song I played was Top of the World by the Carpenters. And again, I felt like I hit the throttle for the lunar module to land on the moon. I turned off the mic, and I thought, that's one small step for Bob, one little leap, I guess, for WKLO. But seriously, I was so captivated by, I am the guy on the air on WKLO now. And and I never considered myself a great jock. I could do the job okay. I loved it. I had a lot of fun. I think that won the hearts of a few people. But just to be sitting there where Bill Bailey had sit, Bill Crisp, Paul Kelly, I don't know if he was ever in that studio, but just all the people I'd heard, Wigglesworth, Brother Love, and Lee Gray and all them, that was very special to me.
Tell me about the lineup that was there at the time that you got started.
Bill Love was doing mornings. He had done 6 to 10 at night for quite a while. He went to middays for a while, and I think he liked doing middays about like he liked driving a gasoline truck through a forest fire. He didn't last very long as midday because I just don't think he liked it, and he went to Cleveland and then came back as morning man. Middays at that time was a guy named Tom Kennedy, who left Louisville the next year and went to a sister station of WKLO's and came back to a short-lived Kix 104 in the summer of 1990. I think they were on the air for about 8 months. And we're a very good radio station. Tom did middays. Afternoon was Mike Rock and Roll Rivers. And bad imitation. Gary Major, 6 to 10 in the evening. Ron Lake, the Rock and Roll Pig, 10 to 2. And Dan Mason all nights. And the fabulous, wonderful, very charming and adorable Bob Klein weekends. There was somebody else doing weekends. I can't remember. Carl Shannon was there very briefly. And he was actually working full-time somewhere else, just came over to KLO for a while. I guess he said, you know, I worked at WKLO for a while or something. I believe he went back over to Wacky. Carl's gone on to do some great things in production, a lot of things with the UK Wildcats, et cetera, and still working on the air up in Lexington. Jackson Smith, who is now Gary Griffin and a dentist here in Louisville, and was Gare on the air on the new KJ100. He started not long after me. It was still kind of under the, I guess, the spirit of Bill Hennis.
Still doing the Drake format type thing?
Yeah, don't let Bill Hennis hear that. If he heard spirit of Bill Hennis, he might not be able to get into buildings. Okay? Now, I talked to Bill before. He's a great guy. Yeah, Robin Walker, the program director, was sort of keeping that image because it really worked. You know, he did a lot of things of his own, but it was very high energy again. I think he was there for about a year and a half as program director. I think his biggest interest, you'd have to ask him, was in horses. And he was sort of leaning, I think, more and more toward that. I believe when I talked to him at the reunion, he's still involved in that. So that's 30 years later up in eastern Jefferson County or Oldham County. He has a farm. Robin at one time worked in L.A. at a station called KRLA, and he programmed a few radio stations before that. He did have a time with Johnny Randolph, as everybody did. And I can still remember every radio station had its heyday. You know, most radio stations in markets this size, it would ebb and flow according to who was on top. And I don't remember either radio station sounding horrible. Of course, there were times when there were changes when the jocks would, you know, they'd say, hey, we suck. We got to do something different, you know. But listening to it back then, the people really didn't have a whole lot of comment about that. It was mostly us. So no matter who was there, because as good as Johnny Randolph was, there were times when Wacky was better than others the whole time he was there. But I know every program director that came there while Johnny Randolph was there, that was their main focus, was keeping the Randolph Panther tamed, which was almost impossible to do. You know, I sort of felt like Wacky has the name. Actually, in a sense, WKLO was first with some things. But there were times when I was at WKLO, particularly under Lee Gray, where I felt like we were just doing a great job. One thing that held Wacky together while Johnny Randolph was there, and you probably know where I'm going with this, was the Duke of Louisville. They could have put John F. Kennedy on WKLO in the mornings, and I don't think he could have beaten Bailey. You think of Louisville radio in the last half of the 20th century, it's Bailey. He's the king, and don't let him listen to this. I don't want his head getting too big. He knows it. He knows it. And he's a very humble guy about it, and he always talks about how much he loved it. When you praise him, he will always get into how much he loved it. And that's why I like being around him. And he likes to tell stories always, likes to hear stories from other people. But if anybody listened to WAKY up to 1981, if they were listening to Louisville Radio, they always mention Bailey. If I say 60s and 70s radio in Louisville to people, they say Bailey or I bring it up. They never say who. They always know. He was the guy. And both radio stations were consistently very good. I scrutinized both of them for probably at least 2 decades until both of them quit playing music. And even when Wacky kind of went MOR in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, which really didn't work, Wacky started playing oldies in 1982. Bob Moody was program director. It sounded like Wacky again. It was high energy. Back then, that was a hard thing to do on AM, but I believe it worked for Wacky for a while. It was a shame the call letters left the city. There's one thing about radio now, and if anybody in Louisville radio in the first decade of the 21st century listens to this, this isn't a cut on them, but there's really not much excitement on radio anymore. As I drive to my daughter's home in Tallahassee, Florida, and back, no matter whether I go through Georgia or Alabama, there's not much excitement. There's a lot of good music. There's a lot of good oldies station. And I know things change from time to time, but nobody's really saying a whole lot anymore. Back in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s in radio, it was entertainment to the point to where you felt like you had a friend there. That's what I felt like Ed Bowman and Paul Kelly and all those people were. They were friends, and of course, Ed Bowman, in a sense, was a friend. But, you know, radio now, I listen to a few Louisville radio stations, but one of them is a high school radio station in New Albany, WNAS, because I know part of the day they're automated, as they used to say, but there's also live students on there, and it's very interesting to listen to them. And one thing you hear on a radio station like WNAS is the natural human mistakes. I made mistakes. I knocked a record of Coyotes off the turntable one night. Wasn't watching what I was doing, and I'm glad Coyote didn't pack a pistol. I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I could have bought him a new car, and it wouldn't have said I'm sorry enough. He later understood, and we laughed about it. Boy, at the time, he was just fuming. But he did get it back on the air pretty quick. I'll tell you a funny story. This was, I think, 1962, and there was a newsman named Omar Andeel on WKLO, and his stepson was a friend of my brother's. And I'll tell you how this connects in a moment. WKLO had what was called the News Tip of the Week, and they gave $25 for the best News Tip of the Week from a listener. I'm listening to Wacky one day, and a guy walked into a bank out on Brownsboro Road, which wasn't far from where I lived, and gave the bank $300. And it was a gift to the bank. And somehow the manager of the bank thought something was up and called the police. The police came out. They thought there was a bank robbery. It wasn't. And the guy never really explained why he was giving the bank the money, and the police just said, well, we can't arrest him for giving you something. I heard this on the air. I immediately called WKLO. They checked it out. They took my name and number, and I'm at home one night and wasn't listening to WKLO for some reason, and somebody walked in and said, you just won the $25 News Tip of the Week. And I called up, and there was a newsman named John Sharp who was on duty. And I said, yes, could you tell me who won the WKLO News Tip of the Week? I don't know how low my voice was at 13, but he says, just a moment, comes back to the phone and says, Bob Klein of 251 Pennsylvania Avenue in Louisville. And I went, okay, thank you very much. And I hung up the phone and went, woohoo, 25 45s. That's where my mind went immediately. I could buy most of the top 40 survey with what I won from WKLO. my brother's friend found out about it. He told his stepfather. His stepfather says, well, we're going to investigate, and if it's true, we might think about bringing a lawsuit against them. Well, of course, they never did. And I always wanted to tell that story when I was at work at WKLO, and I thought, first of all, I'd land up in the penitentiary. But before that, I would see this $25 deduction on one of my paychecks that says, payback for new stip of the week, 1962. But that's a true story. That was so funny, and that's something that happened when I wasn't even working for the radio station. But I was sitting there one night, and I think it was Bo Brady was in there with me at KLO, or when I was doing middays in the mid-70s or something, and I remember telling that story, and they said, I'm going to tell Kathleen Brown as soon as I can. But I never told her that. Maybe I ought to call her now and tell her. The people that worked in radio around here before me were my teachers. I used to listen to Dan Ingram and people like that and Cousin Brucey on WABC in New York, John Records, Landecker, all those people on WLS in Chicago and some other place, WCFL. But Wacky and KLO were, as far as radio is concerned, my first loves, and one of the people that were really instrumental, well, actually two, for helping me get into radio were Gary Burbank and Johnny Randolph, and I couldn't hold them in any higher acclaim than I do. They weren't only excellent on the radio, they were also good mentors and really nice guys.
How did they mentor you?
Just in talking with them about what to do, and I can remember taking a tape down there, and Gary even laughing at a couple of things I did on the tape that I made at a friend of mine's house, a guy named Ed Phillips, who has been a friend of mine since I was about 18. He and I had a pirate radio station in his house, in his bedroom. We had a board. We had three or four turntables. We always wanted a cart machine, but we just couldn't come up with the $600, you know, for a tri-deck when, you know, we were making minimum wage at the grocery store or something. But I made tapes there, and actually that's how I got my first job. Never told anybody, you know, this is a home rig. But there's all kinds of weird ways people get into radio, and we want to hear your story someday, John. Want to hear all about how, from that first day you heard Wacky at camp, how it all came to be. You're still in it after how many years? As of 2007.
35?
35 years.
Yeah.
I think I was in it right around 20. Never made a whole lot of money at it.
Same here.
Always loved it.
Same here.
I don't think, not in the way we knew it, that this type of radio will ever come back. It's sort of like live TV's over with, except with a few exceptions. And it was a great time with all the technology we have now. Radio back then and radio today, technically, of course, everything went from AM to FM, but FM doesn't sound all that much better than it did back then. A lot of times we really didn't care all that much about the quality unless it was really bad. The energy that came out of one speaker, it actually captivated a lot of people because the people I knew that never got into radio, some people that were just kind of even nonchalant about it, would still talk about it. They still listen to it. Bookworms would talk about Wacky and WKLO. So if they were talking about it, there had to be something to it.